dissente.
We dealt with the majority opinion. What did the majority say? In a nutshell. What was the position of the majority?
The speech he gave was constitutional.
So? So? How does that impact what happened to him?
They reversed the fine.
Okay, so he was fined $100. And they reversed it. How come? That was a hard case, was it not? We went over it, and even when I was done, I was doing a head scratcher. Because, by the way, there's a reason why this is a 5-4 case. The majority basically said, because the speech is constitutional, you can't use the constitutional speech as the trigger of the ordinance. Because what did the ordinance seek to do?
Limit speech.
Was that the intent of the ordinance?
To prevent violent outbursts and bullying.
Which we call
fighting words.
No.
Breach of the peace.
Breach of the peace. So what the majority said was that the words are protected, so because the words are protected, that can't be the trigger of breach of the peace. Thus, he should not pay the civil. This wasn't even a criminal case, the trial. It was a civil infraction. So he cannot be charged a $100 fine. Right? Is that what we talked about last class? All right. Well, let's see what Chief Justice Vinson said. Did anyone understand his dissent?
But wasn't he basically saying we don't have jurisdiction because it's a state law?
Well, I don't think he was saying that we don't have jurisdiction because it was a state law. But here's a question for you. Do you have a right to an appeal? No. How do you get an appeal?
You have to say that the court had wrongdoing.
In order to get an appeal, there has to be an error. Did I talk about at what point the error is noted when we did trials? Did I discuss it? I don't remember if I did. I remember saying that you can't get an appeal unless there's an error. But how do you know there was an error? How is it marked in the record? Does anyone have any idea? The error must be shown in the record. And how does it get into the record? The attorneys during the trial must give an objection to. You ever watch a law movie or a law TV show? Your Honor, I object. What do you object about? And what they usually do is they talk about some procedure, something that's there, inadmissible evidence, something along those lines. If you don't object, is there an error?
No.
Why not?
Because it's basically you saying you object. It's your opportunity to say that you think something's wrong.
Yeah, when?
Like, right
You're right there.
Right.
You can't go back 5 days later and be like, oh man, I wish I said this. What was the decision by the majority? What was the decision of the majority at the Supreme Court level?
To overturn
the punishment based on
the trustees.
Based on what?
The breach.
No, because was there a breach of peace? Was there a riot? Was there violence?
No.
There was. The people on the outside. They were breaching the peace. They were being violent. Okay? But he was fined because he used
speech,
fighting words. But who made the decision? The jury did. And how did the jury know what fighting words were? What?
They were given the definition. The definition was wrong.
By who?
The judge.
So they made this decision after receiving instructions. Or instructions to the jury. Was the priest's lawyers present when the instructions were given? Yeah. Jury instructions, that's part of the trial. That occurs after both sides give their closing arguments. The moment both sides are done presenting their evidence, the judge gives the jury its instructions, then they go back into the room and they deliberate. When should they have objected to the flawed instructions?
When it happened.
Then! Did they? No, they did not. Vincent is basically saying the majority found a mistake that was not noticed by the original defense attorney. It wasn't objected to during the trial. It wasn't objected to during the appeals, either at the appellate or the Supreme Court. How can this be the basis of the majority opinion then? Because what's the only way to get an appeal? And the error is noted by?
The attorney in court?
Yeah, who's making an objection? No objection was raised. It's not in the record. Where did the court find it? You know what Vincent said? The court had to dig and dig and dig and play out every last step of the trial. And they noticed the mistake. So, I'll give you an analogy. Let's say I graded your exams, printed them out, I leave them in a file cabinet. I stop teaching here and I leave, but the exam's still in the file cabinet. And then whoever takes over, not that I have an office, but whoever would take over my hypothetical space finds the exam and then notices a mistake. Can they contact the registrar office years after the fact and give you whatever points it was that I took away from you? Essentially, the Chief Justice is saying that's what the majority did here. Does that make sense? Was it even disputed? No, the Chief Justice mentions that this decision, the basis for the decision, was not based on any arguments even between the parties. The original state, the Illinois, or the city that was actually prosecuting this, nor the defense attorneys, they didn't even argue about there being improper instructions. But yet, they found it, and they reversed a $100 fine. Is that a good idea? Should the courts be correcting mistakes that were not noticed by anybody else? Is that not putting the finger on the scale and getting the outcome you want? Is that the way the court system should work? Okay, that's one dissent. Remember, there are three dissents in here. What did Justice Frankfurter say?
He said the majority is going against the balance of power between state and federal law.
Oh, I am so glad you picked up on that. All right. We know we live in a constitutional republic, right? That operates on federalism. We know there are two systems of government. We know there's a United States government that the United States Constitution gives powers to, but then there's the 50 states, and each state has a constitution, and they have powers. In our system, is the federal government in charge of the states? In all things? No. No. Say what you read again. Say it loud so everyone can hear it.
He said the majority is going against the balance of power between state and federal law.
All right. Federal power, so the federal government's trying to tell states what to do, and the right of a state to make law. What was this law about?
Speech.
The law, the ordinance was about speech? No, what was the law about?
Maintaining peace.
Does the federal government have the power to tell the states how to maintain peace? No. My favorite line in here. This is a court of review, not a tribunal. I'm bounded by rules. We do not sit like a qadi under a tree dispensing justice according to the considerations of individual expediency. A qadi is an Islamic judge. In Muslim countries, they don't have courts like we do. They have religious judges. Qadi, who have the power to enforce Islamic law, Sharia law. The judge can make whatever decision they want based on their interpretation of Sharia law. They're not bound by stare decisis, they're not bound by precedent. These judges can basically do whatever they want or they think is right in the moment. Is that how the United States court system operates? Would you want the United States court system operating that way? What would be the result?
A lot of bias.
Absolutely. So, going back to the balance point. What
authority does the Supreme Court have to get involved in state matters? When can they do it?
If it involves constitutional rights.
If it's something that involves constitutional rights. Or what's the other thing? Because we talked about federal questions. Remember we talked about jurisdictions? Federal question is something that involves the U.S. Constitution or...
state disputes?
No. What can the United States government do under the Constitution?
Like liberties?
No. They can pass
laws.
So to get into a federal court, it has to be something dealing with the U.S. Constitution or United States law. Right? And what can they do if the state does something or there's an incident that violates the U.S. Constitution or U.S. laws? Marbury v. Madison. What can the Supreme Court do?
Can you repeat the question?
If an action violates the U.S. Constitution, I should say, I better be more precise. If something potentially violates the U.S. Constitution or potentially violates the laws of the United States, what can the courts do, the federal courts?
Review it.
They can review it, right? Judicial review. And if they review it, what can they then do?
Overrule it.
They can overrule it or?
Affirm
it. But what is the catch? In order to get into the federal appellate system, there must be an issue with the U.S. Constitution or federal law. Why is he there?
It's a state law.
Not even a state law.
City law.
It was a city ordinance aimed at keeping the peace. Why is he even before the Supreme Court? Okay, so now let's put the two dissents together. There was no noticeable objection, and wait, why are we here? Where do we have jurisdiction over this? What about Justice Jackson's dissent? And I love this one more than any of the other two. Because he brings it all together in the beginning, succinctly, briefly.
He said that they argue that the court's judgment was based on like general approval of freedom of speech and not the specific circumstances.
Okay, well, aren't we learning that there are times when there can be government intervention based on certain circumstances? What did the majority do here? Did they look at what was said, how it was said, where it was said, why was it said? Did they look at the context? What was said? Did anyone read? He included just about the whole speech. What did the priest say? What type of things did he say? You gotta find it. It's of course what made it lengthy. Let me see. Okay, here we go. Bum, bum, bum.
you want, like, examples?
Yeah, just give me examples.
One thing he said was they called us God being facets, Nazis, us hanging the souls of something when I entered the building. That's all.
Say that again. Say it loud, say it proud.
I'm going to say something shorter.
Well, no, I know what part you were talking about. Because I think he was talking about the people outside, no? How did he describe them?
He said that the people were outside.
Okay, there were people outside. There were people outside. What were they doing outside? What were the people outside doing? They were protesting. Who? Him. Why were they protesting him? They didn't like what he said. In the priest's words, how did he describe what the people outside were saying about the people inside? I think this is very relevant, particularly on how one political party has been behaving over the last 4 years. When you disagree with the other side, how do you label them?
Fascists.
How about goddamn fascists?
Nazis.
As Nazis. So the people on the outside are calling the people inside Nazis. So how does he describe the people on the outside? It's the same garbage that you hear politically. And we've been hearing it for the last bunch of years. One side is a bunch of Nazi fascists, and what's the other side?
Communists.
Okay, good. And what were the communists doing?
They're breaking doors and stuff.
The communists were violently protesting. They were throwing rocks and bricks and they were trying to break in. Because they're communists. And who are the people that motivated those communists? Were they Christians?
Jews.
Oh, it was the Jews. And who also was out in the crowd?
Is that what you mean?
I think he referenced them in there too, didn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah? Now, Russia promised us we would go back to the official newspaper of Russia. Primarily, it was back about 1929. They quoted the words of George E. Dimitrov, who at the time was the executive secretary of the Communist International. I only quote you this one passage. I would quote thousands of paragraphs to you. Let me quote to you. The worldwide nature of our program is not mere talk, but an all-embracing, blood-soaked reality. That is what they want for us, a blood-soaked reality. But it was promised to us by the crystal gazers in Washington. And you know what I mean by those crystal gazers, I presume? First of all, we had Queen Eleanor, Mr. Smith said. Queen Eleanor is now one of the world's communists. She is one who said this. Imagine coming from the spouse of the former president of the United States 12 long years ago. This is what we said, that the war is but a step in the revolution. The war is but one step in the revolution. And we know who started the war. And on and on and on. He's saying that the people outside are actually domestic enemies of the United States Constitution and the country itself. And that they are starting a revolution. And what do we need to do to the revolutionaries before they do it to us?
Kill them.
Kill them. Stop them. Defeat them. So, you got the Nazi fascists on the inside. And you get the Jews and the blacks and the revolutionaries and the commies on the outside. What are you gonna do about it? What is Justice Frankfurt? And we're not going to go through all the speech. By the way, the priest also made reference to actual quotes from Mein Kampf. That was actually in there. I noticed that. There was also a couple of references to Marx. I got that. Using all the kind of epitaphs. Nasty words about people. What does Justice Frankfurter think about that? Sorry, Justice Jackson. Wrong justice. Considering the nature of the words, considering the nature of the circumstances, what was going on? What was the trial court trying to do? Why was this ordinance used?
Because there was a riot outside.
That was caused by his words. Okay, good. Is provoking a riot by any means allowed? No. Does it matter that he was a priest? No. By the way, was he actually a priest? Did you catch that inside? He was actually defrocked, but he claimed to be a Catholic priest. All right, so we got that. Did the court try to censor what the priest was saying? You know what censorship is? Does anyone know what censorship is? Really? You don't know what censorship is?
Is anyone like you blur out?
Yeah, so someone doesn't like what you're saying, so they stop you from saying it. They blur it out. Was the judge fining him $100 for provoking a riot? Was he trying to censor the priest? He was?
Was he not?
Was he? Did the priest give his words? Was he told he could never speak again or use those words?
Well, he punished him for using the words, though.
Was he punished for using the words, or was he punished for provoking a riot?
Riot.
Mm-hmm. Oh. Okay. It was actually the opposite. And by the way, the government didn't seek to stop him from speaking. What did the government do?
Maintain the peace.
What?
Like, try to maintain the peace.
How?
They fined him.
No, during the incident itself. What did the city provide to him?
Cops.
To do what?
Like, protect the area.
And allow him to?
Talk.
Give his speech. So it's not like they arrested him when he was showing up. No, the police formed a wedge, got the crowd out of the way, helped him get in the building. They stood in the doorway. They kept the mob outside. So the government wasn't trying to censor his speech. The government was actually trying to protect him, to allow him to give his speech. Were they punishing him for his beliefs, his ideology? No. Were they punishing him for his thoughts? No. Were they punish him from giving peaceful communications? No. Was he being discriminated against in any way, shape, or form? Because of who he was or how he dressed? Was he being discriminated against because of who he associated with? Was he being punished for the ideas that he was speaking? What was he being punished for?
The riot.
Starting a riot. Starting a riot. Let's think of clear and present danger. What was the clear and present danger test?
Words will not receive First Amendment protection based on circumstances, how they're used.
Okay, hold on. Words not get First Amendment protections based on how they were used. How are they used here?
Like presenting in front of a crowd of people that want to hear him.
And what was he doing to the people who wanted to hear him?
Talking.
Well, he was kind of provoking their reaction, right? Because what was he trying to get them to do?
Like, rally up against the communists.
You fight against the communists! Okay. So, keep going.
And it has to be clear, like, there's no doubt that there was harm.
Clear and present danger. Clear and present danger. Did his words provoke a clear and present danger?
No.
What did his words provoke? That was a clear and present danger. A riot that impacted
people there.
The people on the inside. It impacted the people on the outside. It impacted all the people who lived in the neighborhood around where it was going on. It impacted the businesses. Okay, so we know we have words provoking potential clear and present danger. What's the other two prongs of the test?
The harm is, like, right now, it's undeniable.
Okay.
And it brings about substantive evil.
Okay. What type of substantive evil could result by a guy saying words provoking a potential war between two opposing ideologies?
Like large-scale death.
Exactly. What's the final piece?
And
Congress has power to prevent.
Congress has the power to prevent. So we can substitute Congress for government. Does any city in these United States have a legitimate right to prevent the destruction, damage, loss of life, loss of property that could result as the result of a riot?
Yes.
So what's the problem? Should this particular speech get the type of protection that the majority wants to give it? Why?
Because it caused a riot and has evil in it?
Yeah. It caused a riot. I don't know if it necessarily has evil in it. We can't make that judgment call. It wasn't saying nice things. But of course, nicety is in the eye of the beholder. You can't make the judgment whether his words were good or his words were bad. All you can look at is what did his words do. His words provoked a violent reaction. So, was he executed? Was he locked up in jail for the rest of his existence? What happened to him? What was his punishment?
$100
fine. It was civil infraction. It was like a speeding ticket. Is that type of punishment justifiable to cause other people down the road from doing similar? Do we want to encourage people to start riots with their words?
No.
No, we do not. Why?
Because it can cause mass harm.
Okay, good. Question. Do you remember all of the riots that broke out 4 years ago during the summer of 2020? What caused those riots?
The murder of George Floyd.
Okay, and what pumped everybody up?
Police brutality?
No. People didn't run out because the police were beating everybody up. They rushed out on the streets because
someone's words.
People were using social media, TikTok, InstaSnap, encouraging people to take to the streets. And then what happened?
Riots.
Yeah.
Arson.
Death. People got killed. Over 100 people died. It wasn't really reported on the news. But yeah, people were getting killed. Look at what they did to Seattle. Look what they did to Portland. Look what they did to Minneapolis. By the way, you want to see what they did to Minneapolis? Watch the movie. I think it's called Miss Minneapolis Burning or The Burning of Minneapolis, something like that. It was a movie that showed the other side of what was not covered in the media. When the government picks sides, that happens. The government decided in 2020 that they were going to allow those protesters to do what they wanted to do because some in government approved of those words.
And the result was billions of dollars of damage. People losing their small businesses, they lost their homes. People were assaulted, people were battered. There was looting, there was pillaging, there was carnage. And people died. Should the government be in that business? What did the majority do here with the words that this priest said? By overturning the fine, saying his words are protected speech, what did they allow?
Riots.
Is that a good thing? Is that what you want government doing? That is the brilliance of Justice Jackson's dissent. Did you see it? Does it make sense? Dissents usually don't become law, but dissents often can serve as warnings. Because when you allow people with different opinions to view events, you can get different descriptions. It allows you to avoid bias, because we're all biased. Our perception of reality is what we see, what we think, what we feel. But is it always true? No. 5-4 decisions always represent those really, really close calls. And I'll tell you, if I was a justice on this, I would have signed in on Justice Jackson's dissent, because I think he's 100% right. You can't allow people to say anything they want, whenever they want, because it could result in bad things. So long as you don't censor them, you don't seek to prevent them from having their ideas, and you don't prevent them from peacefully transmitting those ideas, we as adults can have thick skins and spines and sit back and kind of go like, oh, I don't like, well, like with the protesting signs at the funeral. Yeah, I don't like that. You don't have to agree. But if you have the government allowing some words that could result and did result in violence, then people are going to get harmed. And is that what you want the government doing? So, at the end of the day, how many people think you should be allowed to say whatever you want to say, whenever you want to say? And if someone else gets out of line, that's their problem, not yours. He didn't tell them to go riot, did he? He didn't tell people outside to riot. No, he said, he told the people inside, be careful of those people. They're evil. Should the rioters be punished? And why were they not? Well, should he be punished? Who do you go after? Do you go after the leader? Do you go after the follower? There's no answer, is there? These are all purely rhetorical. But these are the things in the real world that we have to contemplate. Because the moment the government decides what's good and what's bad, what's right and what's wrong, what speech is allowed and what speech can't be said, or what speech is misinformation, there is usually only one outcome. One side's going to be allowed to get away with doing whatever they want. So, just be mindful of that. Okay? All right. What's the next one we're going to deal with? I think it's the last free speech case.
Prohibition order right there.
Let's see. Oh, this is a good one. This is a really good one. This deals with time, place, manner. Oh, that's a good case. All right, so this is what I want you to do. Oh, I didn't activate all the links. I am going to let you guys, after we're done with speech, because this is taking longer than I thought it would, but I don't care. Like I said, I didn't want to like fly through these. Once we're done with Ward v. Rock Against Racism, what I want to do is I'm going to let you guys pick what area we go to next. So do we want to do assembly? Do you want to do privacy? What's in there? Roe v. Wade. Do you want to start doing some civil rights cases? Do we want to do Second Amendment? Do we want to do... what else can we do? Rights, religion. You know, we could pick the theme that we want to do next. So just give it some thought over the weekend. All right? So make sure you have Ward v. Rock ready. Think about what liberty we want to try to understand next. And don't forget on Monday, take the time and thank a veteran. Because you could not be here if it was not for them.